Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 We have a very surprising text this morning, text 44. Yesterday we concluded the summary of Devahuti and Karma Muni traveling all over the place in the universe with this celestial flying city, Vimana, going here, going there, freely, at will. Didn't need a passport or visa, didn't need fuel, didn't need spacesuit. He just traveled wherever he wanted and interacted with the residents of those denizens of those places that have multifarious wonders in each location. Now, we just heard he's gone, he ended yesterday. He went back to his hermitage, just like that, with volition. Doesn't say what happened to this craft, that's the spaceship, or the Vimana. He just returned to his hermitage. Text 44. After coming back to his hermitage, he divided himself into nine personalities. What? Just to give pleasure to Devahuti, the daughter of Manu, who was eager for sex life. In that way, he enjoyed with her for many, many years, which passed just like a moment. Purport. Here, the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, Devahuti, is described as Suratotsuka. Suratotsuka. After traveling with her husband all over the universe in Mount Meru and the beautiful gardens of the heavenly kingdoms, she naturally became sexually stimulated and, in order to satisfy her sexual desire, Kardamuni expanded himself into nine forms. Sadavani became nine, and nine persons had sexual intercourse with Devahuti for many, many years. It is understood that the sexual appetite of a woman is nine times greater than that of a man. That is clearly indicated here. Otherwise, Kardamuni would have had no reason to expand himself into nine. Here is another example of yogic power. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead can expand himself in millions of forms, a yogi can also expand up to nine forms, but not more than that. Another example is that of Saurabhi Muni. He also expanded himself into eight forms, but however powerful a yogi may be, he cannot expand himself into more than eight or nine forms. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, can expand himself into millions of forms, anantarupam, innumerable, countless forms, as stated in the Brahma Samhita. No one can compare with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by any conceivable energetic manifestation of power. Any questions? There's another principle here. Well, two. One is yogic, Prabhupada explains this in Nectar of Devotion, that yogic powers are nothing but subtle manipulation of subtle material laws. Subtle manipulation of subtle material laws. So they're not really doing anything that like Krishna does. They're just because of their subtle consciousness and their understanding of subtle material laws, they can manipulate the subtle material laws and do something. That's wonderful. For example, This is Sariputta discusses this one. Prapti Siddhi means acquiring something from a distant place. You're in one place, and something is in another place, and you can reach out your hand if you're a mystic with Prapti Siddhi, and you can acquire that something that's already existing in some distant place. They can't create something. Well, they can move matter from one place to another place like that. They can, but like the example of Prabhupada told this one when he was a small boy. His father, Gaur Mohan, was a pure Vaishnav and a religious man that, in Prabhupada's words, was not so discriminating in the sense that whatever sadhu was around, he would invite the sadhu to their home and seek the blessings of the sadhu, specifically for his young boy. May he become a wonderful devotee of Srimati Radharani. That was like the consistent blessing that he asked from those various sadhus. So one of those sadhus apparently would more than once would come to Gaur Mohan's home, and he was mystic. So in the assembly, he asked, "What would you like?" And somebody said something like this, "A pomegranate from Afghanistan." Apparently, pomegranates from Afghanistan were considered to be, you know, first class pomegranates, and then there's the first class pomegranate from. So he extended his hand, and in his hand appeared a pomegranate from Afghanistan. Prabhupada said, "I was seated very close. I could see from the stem there was dripping. It was like actually a pomegranate from Afghanistan that he just, boop, and there was the pomegranate still on the stem." So Sariputta's explanation of this, as far as I can recall, was the principle of higher dimensional space. What's that? Something like, according to the biography of Madhvacharya, written by his followers, when Madhvacharya wanted to verify directly with Vyasadeva his understanding of his conclusions of Siddhanta, Madhvacharya wanted to directly go to Vyasadeva. And so he went to Badrinath, to the Himalayas. And there was one follower with him. But his follower couldn't keep up with Madhvacharya because he was the incarnation of Vayu. He could just leap at huge distances, so he couldn't keep up with him. And the biography says, and there's details, there's seven dimensions of Badri. And Vyas is, if we go to Badri, we're not going to find Vyas because he's an upper dimensional Badri. Along with other sages, that at the end of Kali Yuga, Vyas and the other sages descend into this realm and they begin Satya Yuga. Have you ever wondered how you go from the very bottom of Kali Yuga way up to Satya Yuga? You ever wondered that one? I've wondered that one. Here's the answer. Something like a whirlpool. You place something at the outer edge of the whirlpool, and it goes around and around and around. It starts going faster and faster, and then shoo, down. Kali Yuga is like that, or the transformation of the ages is like that. The rate of degradation accelerates as Kali Yuga accelerates. That's how time works. And then once it's the end of Kali Yuga, and Kalki annihilates and then liberates the population that's remaining. How do you get back up there? Some personalities descend and start Satya Yuga. In our case, Vyasadeva's biding his time in Upper Badri, and at the right time he'll descend and start Satyayuga, and it's back at the top again. Interesting, huh? Now, if you were the creator, that would be a really cool way to do it. And that's where Madhvacharya went, and the description is there in this elaborate biography of his life, what the ashram of Vyasadeva looks like in Upper Badri. And he came before him, paid obeisances, and exchanged his ideas and got confirmation, came back down to Lower Badri, and then back to Udupi, and made his commentary. Vedanta Sutra commentary, Bhagavad Gita commentary, confirmed by Vyas. So therefore, we read in our disciplic succession, although there's so many generations that pass from when Krishna was present and Vyasadeva was present till the time Madhvacharya came. And that, so there, that's the link. He received and got confirmation of his understandings from Vyas. So there's an example of higher dimensional space. Madhvacharya was qualified. And some mystics may also be qualified, or yogis, to manipulate the laws of higher dimensional space, acquire something from a distant place. There's more details that Sataputta explains. It's something like, you know, that little game with a child, and how do you make a line? So you take a paper and you fold it, and here's a dot, and here's a dot, and you connect them. You unfold the paper and they're over here. But you fold the paper and they're connected. You know, time, space, continuum, Albert Einstein. How did he understand those things? Or, you know, maybe it's just, but it matches the Vedic paradigm of higher dimensional space. Time, space, continuum. Without the detailed explanation, because I'm not a scientist. But mystics understood those things. And they could manipulate those laws and, for example, acquire something from a distant place. Now, where does that power come from? It comes from the same source that everything comes from. Yogeshwara is the master of mystic power. So any yogi derives his mystic power from master of mystic power. Otherwise, he can't get it. He may or may not acknowledge that he's getting it from the master of mystic powers. But he can't have it without being given it. And it also can be taken away because it doesn't belong to them. The recommendation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is don't aspire for that. There's a nice verse, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mukti, bhukti, siddhi, kami, sakale ashanta. Bhukti, sense gratification. Mukti, liberation. Siddhi, mystic siddhis. Sakale ashanta, your mind is not peaceful as long as you're hankering for this, that, or the other thing. Sense gratification, liberation, mystic powers. Your mind is not peaceful. Ashanti. So, what's the recommendation? The recommendation is you have to desire something. So desire the desire of the Supreme. Desire the fulfillment of the happiness of the Supreme. And whatever he may wish to bestow. Or not bestow. That's the position of transcendence and tranquility, the tranquility of transcendence. That's the bhakti recommendation. I think I mentioned this recently. Once a reporter or someone was interviewing Prabhupada and asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, do you have mystic powers? And his reply was, of course. Look at this. See my Western disciples. Their lives were filled with sinful activity, and now you try to entice them with sinful activity, and the answer is no. There's no greater mystic power than that, that the mystic power of bhakti. Then another time, Prabhupada explained that a pure devotee has all access to mystic powers, whatever is meant or needed for the service of Krishna. Whatever is needed for the service of Krishna. Otherwise, they don't exhibit, because if they exhibited, what would happen? People would think, oh, I want that, instead of I want pure love for Krishna. I want that mystic power. And so Prabhupada's explanation was, generally a pure devotee does not exhibit those things, although they have the capacity according to the will of Krishna for service to Krishna. Now, one of those mystic powers, there's a list of them, a standard list that Prabhupada recites again and again. But a different one is this one, than that common list. And this is just like, it doesn't list being able to create an aerial mansion, not in the list of a common standard type of or category of mystic power. Creating aerial mansions isn't in that list. Or when Sringi by mantra creates a mystical snake bird to kill Maharishi Parikshit, it's mystical, not in the list. And it's through mantra. And he knew the mantra and it was able to do. There's so many examples that aren't on that list. Like Ramchandra, when he wanted to prove his prowess to Vali, he shot an arrow through so many sal trees and went down to the nether world and came back into his quiver. That's not on the list. But he's the Supreme Lord. He's Yogeshwara. So one of those not in the list is being able to expand oneself into up to maximum 9 forms. Now, an explanation that's given elsewhere that's not here is each one of those 9 forms is weaker, and then weaker, and then weaker, and then weaker, up to 9. And they cannot do, as far as I recall, they can't do different things. Kind of like a mirror image, something like that. But in any case, Kardama had such a capacity to manifest. It's not like the soul divided into 9 souls. There's no such thing. Because we know from Bhagavad Gita, the soul can't be cut. So how it works doesn't explain. But he expanded himself into 9 different forms. Here's another one. It's a kind of a mind-teasing notion. In one of those lovely morning walks in Juhu with Srila Prabhupada, Giriraj Maharaj asked a very thoughtful question. Srila Prabhupada, it is said that Krishna's pastimes are simultaneously taking place in sequence in different universes. Krishna's appearing in this universe, and then in another universe, Krishna's appearing, in another universe, Krishna's appearing, like you've given the explanation of the sun is always rising somewhere. So similarly, Krishna's pastimes, they're eternal, and Krishna's appearance, and all of the Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's killing of demons, this and that. And one of his eternal associates is Arjuna. Wherever Krishna appears, Arjuna is there in his Bhoma Lila. So how does it work, Prabhupada? Because Krishna is unlimited, but the living entity is limited. So are there expansions of Arjuna in each universe where Krishna is performing his pastime? There's multiple Arjunas? And Prabhupada's answer was yes. Didn't explain the technology. So it's not just nine, but it's N expansions of Arjuna. He's Yogeshwara. And that which we can't do and can't even fathom, he can do because he has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. In one of Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas, in Bhagavat Sandarbha, there's this concept of Bhagavan mentioned in Vishnu Purana by Parashramuni that says the concept of Bhagavan, the meaning of Bhagavan is he who has all opulences in full. He who has all bhagas in full. That's Bhagavan. He possesses all bhagas. And Jiva Goswami goes on to say that there's no question of understanding God without accepting he has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. And as soon as you have accepted, yes, of course, you can't limit God. He has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. Then it becomes easy to understand him. And without that, you can't understand him. Now, you can't conceive of the inconceivable. You can accept that there is such a thing as beyond the capacity of the mind to conceive of potencies that are unlimited and inconceivable. You can conceive of that. That's Bhagavan. And Bhagavan can invest potencies in Arjuna. Or in this case, Kardama Muni. Now we're coming back to the text. Where Kardama Muni, being this qualified personality, highest qualification is his pure devotion. He only does what is in the interest of the Supreme Lord. And serving the interest of the Supreme Lord, the Lord Vishnu told him long, long ago, before he was married, that the Lord was going to arrange for him to have a wife. So that he, Lord Vishnu, could appear as the son of Kardama Muni, because that was his desire, parental affection, Vatsalya Rasa. And so I will appear as your son. For this to happen, you require a wife of equal qualification as you, and in 2-3 days she's coming right here to the forest. And just say yes when the request is made to accept her as your wife. So he knew that was the Lord's interest, and he knew lots of things that are not disclosed in the verses of the Bhagavatam, but at least in the case of Devahuti, he understood the plan of the Lord, which was from this union of his nine expansions, which took place over a period of a number of years. Interestingly, we're going to hear shortly, nine daughters, not, you know, one after the next, but somehow all at once. Doesn't say how. And poor Devahuti carrying nine children at once, and they were all born at once. Whew. But it was the Lord's plan. And so Kardama Muni has no interest other than the Lord's interest. He has the mystic powers to do what's appropriate for the circumstance. It's not that there isn't any other option for Kardama Muni than this one, but it was the Lord's plan, and he fulfilled the Lord's plan in the way that's being described. And he had the capacity to do from the master of mystic power. And last thing is, in this purport is mentioned Sorabhi. Sorabhi Muni is another who had mystic powers, and it specifically said he expanded himself into 8 forms. But the emphasis that Prabhupada is making here, as he did in previous verses, a mystic may do extraordinary things, but they can never equal God. Because God is unlimited, and mystics, they're limited. Their capacity of manipulating subtle material laws surpasses that of ordinary people who don't have that capacity to manipulate subtle material laws. Supposing somebody has some capacity to manipulate subtle material laws, that doesn't mean they're God. And foolish people think, oh, without mentioning names, he can do Prapti Siddhi, he can extend his hand and in his hand appears some gold. He must be God. Those people need to read Srimad Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta purports so they don't make that mistake. But people make that mistake. Innocent, but at the same time ignorant. And so we wish for people to become conversant in Srimad Bhagavatam, not so they can become mystic yogis and create aerial mansions and expand themselves into so many forms that do Prapti Siddhi or fly in a carpet. Hare Krishna. It's not so popular anymore, but it used to be that when speaking about, you know, cartoonist type people, when characterizing mystics, they would be characterized as flying in a magic carpet. Maybe, you know, a drawing of a guy with a long beard and flying in the air on a carpet. Something like walking on water, flying in the air. It's just subtle material laws. Prabhupada explains that in Nectar Devotion. By machine, one can do these things. By mechanical means, one may do these things. Not all of them. You can't become small and big, but mystic power. It's just an interest to replicate in a mechanical and a non-godly means, mechanistic, atheistic mechanistic means, to replicate what one can do on a subtle platform, which is replicating something that ultimately is a power of the Supreme Lord. So just go to the Supreme Lord. That's the advocacy of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so any discussion? Questions?
As it was mentioned that the devotee exhibits the potency to do something because he, as for his service purpose of fulfilling the desire of the Supreme. What's the qualification for? I mean, Krishna doesn't give that empowerment to everyone.
That's right.
And so even though I have, say for example, I have desire to do something, but I don't have the capacity to do certain things, what's the qualification to actually receive that empowerment?
Well, it depends on, first of all, is the mood of devotion, and second of all, is the will of the Lord. He may not wish you to do that, even you may wish to do that. He may wish you to do that and wants to see your purity. He wants to see your determination. So, man proposes, God disposes. That's the formula. And he may say, no, I don't want you to do that. at some point in time it may become clear. He doesn't want you to do that. King Chitraketu, for example, he couldn't take no for an answer. I think it's okay to share this with you. Anuttama and I were discussing about his current circumstance. And he, you know, he thought this service to Krishna, to persevere and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- I don't know what Krishna wants, but I know this doesn't seem to be what Krishna wants. So I just redirect my energy. You follow? And so don't be King Chitraketu, Mike. Meaning, if it's clear the Lord doesn't want, you just acknowledge this. We strive by reasonable means, not extreme means. That's passion and attachment to the result. And that's not bhakti. We may strive to whatever. Not what Krishna wants. We just accept that's not what Krishna wants. Because we're at Krishna's feet. We want what Krishna wants. We endeavor within reason and see if Krishna wants. Man proposes, God disposes. You may say no. Okay. You may say yes. Okay.
So in this process, the consulting the higher authorities sure. is very critical because I cannot understand what Krishna wants or not wants.
Well, that's not your only option. There's also, you know, common sense. What did Anuttama do? He made, you know, what he thought was Krishna's, what Krishna wanted. To him it made sense. But it wasn't what Krishna wanted. He reached that conclusion. Sometimes the higher authority, like Grandfather Bhishma, saying, how to understand the plan of the Lord. Right? Chapter 9. So his advice was, just look at these three things. And then if you do those three things, you're fine. You don't have to worry about what the plan of the Lord is. Yes?
For me, I wanted to get some clarification on how, say some service is given to me, and when I do it myself, it feels I'm doing it, means I'm serving it.
Mm.
But when I say I do that service and somebody offers something into that, then I goes into the mode of I'm helping to complete that service mode. So how can I get out of that part?
Practice. Cultivation. Chant good japa. Hear Srimad Bhagavatam with rapt attention. Follow the bhakti process carefully. Gradually. Keep striving for that standard, the unmixed standard, knowing that presently it's mixed. Keep striving for unmixed by proper means. Verse in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, one who strives by proper means is sure of success. So do that. Keep the goal in mind, with humility recognizing, I'm not there yet, and don't become discouraged or frustrated, just continue to strive by right means towards what you're clear what the goal is. What's likely to happen is, you'll get greater clarity what the goal is by doing that, and you'll get greater clarity what the obstacles are by doing that.
Especially at work situation, or when somebody is thinking, I'm happy, things are going to happen, then you know Krishna is striving. But you know, people are thinking this way is complacent, you know, or it comes across as complacent and happy. So how do I answer that? How do you get over that? Or is it because people are thinking I'm thinking that way, or do I need to do something?
Keep it simple. You just made it complicated. You know, so. The simple is, we're in the position of mixed devotion. And what's important is not what other people think. What's important is your relationship with Krishna. Put that at the center and cultivate that. And when you cultivate that, it's not complacency. When you're cultivating that, complacency isn't in the picture. It may appear to be, but it's not in the picture. Because you're cultivating your relationship with Krishna. And one of the proofs that it's not complacency is you continue over the stretch of time to be always striving, always striving, always striving. You know, so the passionate fellows in the workplace, they get all passionate about something or other. And then their attention goes to something else, and attention goes to something else. And there's no steadiness. Because the mode of goodness is not prevailing, the mode of passion is prevailing. Those persons may look at the mode of goodness person and saying, you're lazy. And the mode of goodness person smiles and says, I'm going to keep on and persevere until it's completed. But I'm going to do it in a manner that's actually going to get the result whatever the language is, in a proper manner. I'm going to continue to strive. I'm not going to go nuts like you guys. Well, you know, you don't have to say it like that, but by example, they just continue to show. And one who does like that for Krishna, Krishna gives intelligence beyond the intelligence of others. So because I'm preparing for this Ayodhya Yatra, there's this description that comes when Vishvamitra brings Ram and Lakshman and Sita to the ashram of Gautama, and it's deserted, and he wants to know what's all this. So the whole story of Ahalya is following the churning of the milk ocean when Mohini Murti was generated from the churning of the milk ocean, from the nectar, the amrita that was generated, Mohini Murti appeared, and that whole scene took place. So, the demigods then, this is the history of Gautama and Ahalya, the demigods say to Lord Brahma, did you see the beauty of Mohini Murti? And where in your creation is someone that is so wonderfully beautiful and qualified in so many ways? It's like a challenge. So Brahma said, very well, I'll create to my capacity. So Ahalya was a direct creation of Lord Brahma. And she was so attractive, many, 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 many suitors wished to have her as their wife. And Gautama was very clever, and he wanted only the most qualified person to become Ahalya's husband. So he said, whoever can circumambulate the universe three times, first, that person. So Indra was, you know, the front of the list, wishing to have Ahalya as his wife. So he started traveling around the universe. And Gotama very calmly circumambulated a cow 3 times. So he won the prize. Because he was, you know, he was fixed not in passion, but in a higher mode of nature. So he accomplished the same thing in a different way because of his qualification of understanding. So that's an example of, you know, work in the workplace. How you do what you do. If Krishna gives intelligence, you can do things that others cannot do. I can think of some other examples. A devotee I know who was a consultant with such and such company, and they were paying him to figure out a problem, and they, you know, they had this whole research and development team that spent years to solve a problem for the company, couldn't work. And one fine day, the inspiration came. And the problem was solved. Just bhavati, this super soul provided. This connected with that, connect with that. But he wasn't spending the hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. It was, he was a consultant, part-time. In practical terms, this is possible. Now, when, then requires the quality of patience and perseverance and determination, and it, those are natural qualifications when one is a devotee of Krishna, doing things for Krishna. It's not, Krishna has to jump. We're not, he's not our order supplier, but we have faith in Krishna. So it's easy to get complacent. And find any excuse to get complacent. It's real easy. It's not easy to stay steadfast in devotion. Takes more energy, more concentration, and more qualification. And it's too easy to fall into passion and like run around. Get it done. Mode of passion, false ego. Real easy. The other is another qualification, higher qualification. Yes?
Mystics.
Okay.
They propose themselves as God.
Or they have their followers say, tell them I'm God. Okay.
Yeah, and some people follow them.
Yeah, sure.
So when we say that Bhagavatam doesn't say, or any of our scriptures doesn't refer them as God, how,
right.
They say that we don't know. God comes in unlimited forms. So how to...
Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatriki, Vidhim, Vina. You know the verse? You familiar? Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So with reference to scripture. Someone could say anything. Okay. In spiritual circles, we find scriptural authority to support anything or something. Where it's the scriptural support that says... And they'll say, well, God appeared. Okay. He can do anything. And that the bigger picture is they're scheduled incarnations. That's one. And there's others. Ask the person to show their universal form. That's another one. There's others. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, I had an interesting encounter in one of the japa sessions. A Western lady, like early 60s or late 50s, she was coming for chanting sometime, and then she started reading Prabhupada's books. And she got stuck at one point where Prabhupada says one should use the sexual power only for begetting Krishna conscious children.
Okay.
So and she got stuck. She is not able to move forward. She,
okay.
So I tried to explain, but she was not getting it. But what I got from her discussion is, it is agitating. She is feeling guilty. Otherwise, she would have pushed it aside, not argue about it. So I was thinking to give her letter, like something, some people who were able to do only for that purpose and completely detached from it, and like Kardam Muni. So how shall I explain this to you?
Somebody that's attached, it's pretty hard to explain anything.
Yeah.
And a very simple reply that may be accepted, or in this case may not be accepted, is behind two things. Behind creation, there's a purpose of everything that's created, a God-given purpose of everything that's created. The God-given purpose for sexual power is to produce children, to produce offspring, whatever the species. And it's there in all species, and it's there for that purpose. That's the God-given purpose. And so if we accept things according to the God-given purpose and not otherwise, that's an ideal, or it's a natural way to live. Now, she might argue, well, there's another purpose, and that's just pleasure. Then the reply is, in recognizing the Creator, that there is a Creator, there is a source of everything, although there may be apparent pleasure, that's not the purpose. The purpose is, according to Bhagavad Gita, there's the purpose. According to religious principle, the religious principle says this. So you may not be comfortable with that religious principle, but that's the God-given purpose, stated directly. And if by not accepting that principle, you certainly have free will, or others, similarly, to have free will and do something else, then there's, you're out of harmony with the will of the Supreme. That's the consequence. And that with that, out of the will of the, out of harmony, then there's disturbance to yourself and to material nature and to the world around you. How to bring alignment so that there's harmony? Accept the will of the Supreme. The purpose of the creation is this. All over the place, there's people that have a whole other idea of, you know, what a tree is for, or what earth is for, or what water is for, or what wind is for, or what anything is for, what another person is for. If the other person is seen as an object for my enjoyment, that's one way of seeing other persons. And there's another way, you know, a God-given way of to see. So advocacy is to understand, according to this descending knowledge system, what's the God-given purpose for anything. And engage and interact with that anything, the objects around you, in a way that's in harmony with the will of the Supreme. You don't have to accept it, because you have free will. So what's the intention of the Creator? Ask Him. Here's the verse. And here's some other references that say the same thing. If you'd like to know, are there other references besides this one? Plenty. There's one purpose. And not otherwise. You want the otherwise option, then that's out of harmony. And that's a choice.
Yes.
But that's the result. It's out of harmony. And that force binds one to the conditioning influences of material nature. And it makes a disturbance in, you know, the grand picture of harmony within material nature. And then you go by it, you or anyone goes by that principle, and you multiply it by however many living entities there are on this planet, you get a lot of discord. Something else? Yes? She wants you to go first.
Yesterday there was a topic about, we discussed briefly about the shelter, how shelter gives the protection from workplace topic. And I was wondering if you could give little explanation about, because, you know, when the devotee starts practicing devotional service, they move forward and take shelter of a spiritual master and then move forward and take initiation. So this shelter taking, the what should be the mode of person who took a shelter? So from that point onwards, is meditation that I am under the shelter of a particular person, under shelter of Krishna ultimately, how should he process, okay, how should I live my life under the shelter?
Well, Anukunyena Krishna Anushilana, that's how. It's Rupa Goswami's language, but we're going to discuss this particular question in Gita Nagari in a whole class, but the principle is, I understand the will by both teaching and conduct of the person who I've taken shelter of, and I accept that mood and the conduct. I mold my life in such a way that the instruction is my life and my conduct follows the conduct and mood of the person who I have taken shelter of. Again, because I've been particularly immersed in Balakanda and Ayodhyakanda of Ramayana, again and again and again, it surfaces. It's similar to Bhagavad Gita, where the kings in the Kaku dynasty, they follow Anushilana, they follow the conduct of their predecessors, their ancestors. And that includes when they take a vow, they fulfill it. There's no question of uttering something and then you don't do it. So that's Anushilana. And you utter those things that are consistent with the line that you're representing. That, in that case, it's a family, but in our case, it's a disciplic succession. We follow. And so, and I may be here instead of there, but I'm cultivating Anushilana. And I accept those things, Anukulyena, Anushilana. And Krishna gives the intelligence. What's what? It's subtle. And so intelligence has to be refined to understand when we have decisions to make, and because we're making decisions moment to moment anyway, how to get the intelligence in such a way we're actually in full harmony, full alignment with our spiritual master and the line of spiritual masters that we're following. And we do that. We cultivate. That's what you do when you take shelter. There's someone else. Yes.
Krishna, good morning. Good morning. Would we consider about the things, the mystic powers during the Satya Yuga or whatever, the pure devotees had the mystic powers. And when we consider this Kali Yuga, starting of the Kali Yuga, they have also the mystic powers. I wanted to understand the purpose and need behind allotting these mystic powers to the people in Kali Yuga, by which everybody is getting confused or misled. Is that needed to get some frustration over these material things and then divert us or divert the people towards reality?
Is your question, why would the Supreme Controller sanction confusion? Is that your question? That which leads to confusion. That's your question. He's the well-wishing friend of all living entities. And then some living entities are misled. And they want to be misled. So no, what's the Supreme Controller supposed to do with that? It's Kali Yuga. And so, take the leader of the pack, the personality of Kali. How can the Lord sanction the personality of Kali to do what the personality of Kali does? And then all the other people that do what other people do, that's because they have the power to do something or other, it's creating quarrel and dissension and strife and wars and stuff. It's recognizing, the Supreme Lord recognizing the free will of the living entity. Suradam sarvadehinam. He's the well-wisher of all living entities. And some living entities are misusing their free will. So there may be sanction for their misuse of free will. And then there's the consequences for that misuse of free will and the conduct that's been performed through the agency of that sanction. Otherwise they can't do the bad things. But, you know, but to speak of mystics, just, you know, all the other things that go on. Crime and etc. Why have Kali Yuga? Man would just hit the delete button, no Kali Yuga. Or why have creation? Just hit the delete button, no creation. Because there's the potential in creation for misuse of free will. In fact, that's why there's creation. So just take away free will. And if there is free will, then there's the exercise of it. According to guna and karma. Yes.
How to protect our Krishna consciousness, especially visiting parents who are non-devotees for a longer period of time, like 3-4 weeks?
Parents who are non-devotees. Could you say the question again? I'm not clear what you're asking.
Like, for example, I'm planning to visit my parents who are in the material consciousness. How to protect my own Krishna consciousness.
Okay. Not easy. How long are you going to stay?
3 weeks.
Watch that 3 weeks may shrink to less than 3 weeks, because that's a lot. Shorter periods of time. Maybe some time and go away and then come back again sometime. But I can think of three standard things. One is by mood and behavior, you know, the affective side as well as the practical activity side, set very nice standard. By achar, very pleasing. By your pleasant words, and don't become irritated and speak harshly and do things like that. That will be pleasing to parents who aren't devotees, oh, our daughter's has very nice quality. Whatever she's doing, it's good. It's good. They may not consciously think that, but that, you know, she's good. Second thing is, your practices keep them private, so it's not in their face, that it maybe appear to be a challenge or confrontational, or I don't accept you, I'm big and you're small because you don't do this. So you're not thinking that, but they may think that you're thinking that and react. So in principle and as far as possible, keep your practices private, meaning whatever is needed, rise early and do your chanting things in the morning, even if it means you take a nap in the afternoon or take rest early or combination of things. In the privacy of your room where you stay, you just keep your practices private so they're not disturbed. And if you don't finish everything, you go for a walk and do something not in front of them. And don't try to give teachings. Just if they ask, be conservative. Even like, you know, titrate just a little few drops here and there. Nothing major. And then the sticky point commonly is eating. That's the third thing. So I have these practices. You know, that is, thanks to you, Mom and Dad, I've learned good values in life. Thank you. You've given me this wonderful gift of good values in life. And in course of time, I have developed a habit. I hope it's okay, you know. I offer prayers before I take my meal. So I want to do that. I want to keep that practice. I want to say some prayers before I take my meal. And then comes, well, what about the ingredients? You know, the onions and garlic element. So, you know, they want to cook for you, or your mother will want to cook for you, and you'll say whatever you need to say. And if you get it in a really difficult circumstance that it's like looks like it's going to explode or something like that, you can consider different options, like you know, draw the line and say, I'm not going to cross the line. Or you can say, you know, my doctor recommends I don't eat these things. You can, under your breath, you say my spiritual doctor, but or you could say, my dear Lord Krishna, this is my circumstance. Please excuse me. I know what you know, etc. And you proceed. Not advisable, but sometimes it gets really egregious and it's something like that's needed so there's no fire in the house. Yes. Yes. Okay, thank you very much to the Prabhupada.